On the day Judge Mishkin ruled the armbands unconstitutional, a decision that came to be known as the Mishkin Proclamation, Ellie Wakefield was eating at the hamburger stand adjacent to the hospital in Central City, where she worked as a volunteer. Eponine, appearing for the first time in public without an armband, joined her at her table.
"I wonder why I never saw you before at the hospital," Eponine said as she took a bite of a French fry. "What do you do there, anyway?"
"Mostly I talk to the sick children," Ellie replied. "The Tiasobiots are very efficient, but they're not that sympathetic. If you do not mind my asking, why do you do it, Ellie? You are young, beautiful, healthy. There must be 1,000 things you would rather do."
"Not really. My mother has a very strong sense of community, as you know, and I feel worthwhile after I talk to the kids."
After finishing her meal, Eponine reported to Dr. Turner's office for her biweekly checkup. A Tiasobiot informed her that the doctor was running behind. A black man with sharp eyes and a friendly smile was also sitting in the waiting room.
"Hello," he said when their eyes met. "My name is Amadou Diabo. Great day, huh? What a relief to take off that cursed armband."
Eponine now remembered where she had seen the man before. It was at a group meeting for RV-41 sufferers. Someone had told Eponine that Amadou had contracted the retrovirus through a blood transfusion in the early days of the colony.
"It seems that big news always happens in pairs," Amadou was saying. "The Mishkin Proclamation was announced only hours before the leggy things were seen for the first time."
Eponine looked askance at him. "What are you talking about?"
"You haven't heard about the leggies yet? Where in the world have you been? The exploration team over at the other module has been in the process of widening their penetration site for the last few days. Today, they were suddenly confronted by 6 strange creatures that crawled out of the hole in the wall. Apparently, they look like hairy golf balls attached to 6 giant jointed legs. They crawled all over the men, the biots, and the equipment for about an hour. Then they disappeared back through the penetration site."
Eponine was about to ask some questions about the leggies when she was ushered into Dr. Turner's office.
"So far, so good," he told her after completing his examination. "You do have the virus in your system, but there's no sign of heart muscle deterioration."
They walked out to the waiting room together. While Dr. Turner was describing certain symptoms of the illness that Eponine was to watch for, Ellie came into the room. At first, Dr. Turner ignored her presence, but when he finally looked at her, he did a double take.
"May I help you, young lady?"
"I've come to ask Eponine a question, doctor. If I'm disturbing you, I can wait outside."
"It's quite all right," said Dr. Turner. His final comments to Eponine were surprisingly disorganized.
3 months before the elections, an open meeting of the Senate was held. Everyone in the colony was allowed to attend, and it seemed as if they had. The gallery was completely filled, and people were standing along the walls. On the main floor, the 24 members of the New Eden legislative body were called to attention by their presiding officer, Governor Kenji Watanabe. The governor introduced Dr. Robert Turner, who made a strong case for doubling the budget allocation for RV-41 research. After Turner finished his speech, Ian McMillan, the opposition candidate for governor, took the floor. It was understood that both Governor Watanabe and his party's choice for his successor, Dmitry Ulanov, favored a significant increase in the medical budget, even if new taxes were required to finance it. McMillan, who was backed by Toshio Nakamura, was reportedly opposed to an increase. McMillan began his speech.
"It is too easy to open our hearts and purses, allocating funds for all Dr. Turner's requests."
His principal point was that RV-41 carriers made up less than 5% of the population, and the cost of helping them was incredibly expensive. Then, McMillan went on to present his version of the story about the leggies rushing out of the second habitat and frightening the exploration team. He made it sound as if their attack was the first foray in a planned interspecies war. McMillan suggested that the leggies might be followed by yet
more fearsome creatures. Money spent for defense is money spent for all of us, he said.
His speech was interrupted by applause from the gallery many times. He then outlined a more cost-effective plan to deal with the terrible tragedy of the RV-41 victims.
We will create a village for them, he intoned, outside New Eden, where they can live out their final days in peace.
In the gallery, Richard and Nicole sat listening. The longer Macmillan spoke, the greater Richard's disgust grew. He hated political gatherings and had been badgered into coming by Nicole. Nicole, meanwhile, was chastising herself for having underestimated Nakamura, whom she knew was the real author of Macmillan's speech. Both the Wakefields were astonished when they saw Ellie down on the Senate floor, approaching the rostrum. Ellie was introduced by Governor Watanabe as the next speaker. She began,
In our civics class in school, we have been studying the colony constitution, which states that any citizen of New Eden may address one of these open hearings.
Ellie took a deep breath before continuing. I wanted to speak today because I believe I have a unique point of view on the RV-41 sufferers. First, I am young, and second, until a little over 3 years ago, I never had the privilege of interacting with a human being other than my family. For both these reasons, I treasure human life. Dr. Turner, who works all day and sometimes all night to keep us healthy, obviously treasures human life as well. Because human life is so precious, we must continue to study this horrible disease until we can contain it and control it. Each individual person is a unique miracle, an amazing combination of complex chemicals with special talents, dreams, and experiences. Nothing can be more important to the colony than an activity aimed at the preservation of human life. There was an eerie silence as Ellie stepped away from the rostrum. Then thunderous applause erupted. Tears flowed in Nicole's eyes. Dr. Robert Turner stood on the Senate floor and opened his arms to Ellie.
Nicole leaned over the basin and stared at her face in the mirror. She ran her fingers across the wrinkles under her eyes and smoothed her gray bangs. You're almost an old woman, she said to herself, smiling. She backed up from the mirror and turned so that she could see what she looked like from behind. The Kelly green dress she planned to wear to Ellie's forthcoming wedding fit snugly against her body, which was still trim and athletic.
Not bad, she thought.
When she went to show Richard, she found him on his study floor, surrounded by monitors and a jumble of electronic equipment.
Have you heard the news from the Central Plain? He asked. Our defense forces reportedly destroyed 3 Leggies who were harassing the engineering crew.
Did the Leggies make any attempts to fight back?
No, they didn't.
And you can just imagine what kind of picture the others are developing of us. We react in a hostile manner to what is certainly only an attempt at contact.
On one of the monitors, the morning television news was concluding with an interview with the colony's weather director. The woman explained that the unusually dry and windy recent weather had been caused by a modeling error in their computer simulation.
They don't have the slightest idea what they're doing, Richard grumbled. They're overcommanding the system and generating chaos.
While Richard served as the chief engineer in New Eden, Nicole had been appointed, along with Pyotr Mishkin and other political appointees, to a judgeship. One day, an unusually violent case came into her hands. A boy of Nicaraguan origin had been accused of raping a Japanese girl. Nicole interviewed the boy, whose name was Pedro Martinez, in her office. Nicole's intuition told her that something about the case didn't make sense. When she started probing, the boy at first refused to speak, but finally Nicole succeeded in gaining his trust.
Judge Wakefield, he said quietly, Mariko and I did have sex last night, but it was her idea.
Tears rolled down Pedro's cheeks.
I would never have hurt her.
As he spoke, they both heard a strange sound, like the crack of a whip in the distance. Thunder. The New Eden Hospital was a madhouse. Humans and biots were dashing about. Gurneys with bodies were standing in the halls. Patients were shouting in agony. Nicole, who had been summoned to provide medical assistance, was on the phone with Kenji Watanabe. We need every Tiaso in the colony sent here. The whole Nara area, that enclave behind Vegas, surrounded by Sherwood Forest, is a disaster. Lightning struck, causing a tremendous conflagration. The crisis was dealt with, but it had increased the tension in New Eden. When Nicole returned, exhausted, to her home the next morning, she again found Richard completely preoccupied with some project involving his computer.
What are you doing, darling?
Richard glanced up at Nicole. Someone has accessed my recent data files in the central supercomputer, at least 5 times in the last 3 weeks. Their communication device buzzed. Nicole stumbled across the floor to answer it. Judge Mishkin's concerned face appeared on the monitor.
We have a dangerous situation here outside the detention compound by the courthouse. There's a mob gathering. They want access to Martinez. Apparently, Mariko Kobayashi committed suicide.
Kenji Watanabe was at a loss as to how to deal with the turmoil in New Eden. When he received a call from Toshio Nakamura, who said he had a plan for resolving the colony's problems and demanded that Watanabe-san visit him to discuss it, Kenji had no choice but to comply. As Kenji expected, Nakamura's Japanese palace in the village of Hakone, built of wood and shoji screens in the classic Kyoto style, was exquisite. A kimono-clad girl ushered the governor into one of its rooms. He knelt down on a cushion on the tatami mat and waited. One of the shoji slid open, and Nakamura, dressed in a samurai outfit, complete with sword and dagger, entered and knelt on a cushion opposite him. He is not my shogun, Kenji thought. I must change this atmosphere before any serious discussion starts.
Nakamura-san, we are both busy men, Governor Watanabe said in English. Let us dispense with formalities and cut straight to the heart of the matter.
Nakamura's face showed nothing, but he said,
You have forgotten your Japanese manners, Watanabe-san. It is impolite to start a business discussion before you have complimented your host on the surroundings and inquired about his well-being.
We are not in Japan, and our ancient Japanese customs are about as germane now as that outfit you are wearing.
The tycoon rose to his feet.
All right, we will do this your way. Watanabe, you have lost control of the colony. You have botched the environmental and RV-41 issues. And the Martinez case is about to prove explosive. I want you to resign tomorrow. Today, you should exercise your executive privilege to take the jurisdiction for the Martinez case away from Nicole Desjardins Wakefield.
Is there anything else? Kenji asked.
Only one more thing. Tell Yulenov to withdraw from the election. He can't possibly win.
Are you aware, Nakamura-san, that semen from 2 different individuals was found in Mariko Tabayashi at her medical examination after the rape?
Nakamura momentarily lost his composure.
We have not been able to identify the other party, Kenji continued. The semen samples mysteriously disappeared from the hospital laboratory before full analysis could be completed.
You've missed a point, Watanabe. Whether or not Martinez is guilty is really not that important. I have promised her father that the boy will be punished, and that's what counts.
I'm going to leave now, Kenji said, before I become really angry.
You will not be given another chance, said Nakamura.
Thank you.